Welcome to the GoTo Podcast. In this episode, Brian Rinaldi and Raymond Camden, authors of the Jamstack book, explore the past and future of this new standard architecture for the web. They provide you with a list of their favorite tools and how their book can help you build your first Jamstack website. Created for developers, by developers, GoTo gathers the best minds in the software community. Stay up to date with the latest in tech through GoTo's top-rated events held online and in person in Chicago, Amsterdam, and Copenhagen, and by subscribing to the GoTo Conferences YouTube channel, where you can find thousands more high-quality dev talks. Learn more at gotopia.tech.
Hi, I'm Brian Rinaldi. I'm a developer advocate at StepZen and one of the co-authors of the Jamstack book from Manning. My other co-author, Raymond Camden, is here with me. So I know for the book club, there's usually like an interview format, but since Ray and I both wrote the book, we're kind of just going to interview each other. So why don't I toss it over to you, Ray, for a quick intro.
Sure. Thanks, Brian. I'm Ray Camden. I am a developer evangelist for Adobe, another co-author with Brian. I wrote the good half of the book. Is that how it is, right, Brian?
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, especially because I'm not done with my half yet.
That's
right.
There you go.
So, we're going to, our book, obviously, called the Jamstack Book. So it's about Jamstack. So for those of you who haven't heard of Jamstack before, we're kind of going to go over a little bit of an introduction of what Jamstack is, which is actually a really, really important question when it comes to Jamstack, because there's still some debate. For anybody who hasn't been around the Jamstack world for a while, you know, we started 2015 or 2016, I think it was. I can't remember which, 2015, I believe.
Yeah.
We started with JavaScript APIs and markup was the jam. And that has evolved. Nowadays, we don't capitalize the JAM anymore. We just, you know, do it all lowercase, or I guess with a capital J, that's partly because the definition of Jamstack has evolved quite a bit. Let's start with you, Ray. How do you define the Jamstack?
Sure. So I think for me, I think about the evolution of it. You know, we started talking about this, like you were saying, 5 or 6 years ago. Back then, it was just static websites. So, you know, I had presentations on intro to static websites and, you know, stuff like that. Every time that we would talk about it, there was always this, yes, it's static, but you can do X, Y, and Z to make it dynamic, to make it up to date, to make it relevant, you know, in comparison to a traditional app server site. So for me, the Jamstack, it's all about having the power and the flexibility, of a traditional app server, but having the simplicity of a mostly static production build. So most of my website is static and just flat files, as it should be, because most of a website, or at least good portions of a website, can be static. It doesn't have to be drawn from a database because the content's not changing. And the parts that do need to be dynamic, they are dynamic with JavaScript. They are dynamic at build time. You know, it's kind of the power of the app server without having to worry that it's actually running.
Yeah, I think generally I agree with your definition. I kind of do, when I do this talk, I give it a little bit of a different take. First of all, I tell people, like, just forget the jam, forget the jam, right? Like, everybody's, because so many people started with that JavaScript APIs and markup, and part of my trouble is that doesn't really differentiate much, because everybody's like, well, okay, well, my, you know, server-side React site uses JavaScript APIs and markup, right? So I'm like that, I'm doing Jamstack. And it's like, no. So I focus on like some of the key pieces, which, I mean, I think a static site generator is a critical piece of the tool set. I think, you know, that kind of leads into the build that goes, the kind of CI/CD process that we've adopted now, almost like a de facto standard, right? When I started doing this stuff with Jekyll, I remember I was using a little tool that would help me FTP the results to my server. So that was not Jamstack. That was just static sites. And now I think part of that process of being able to check stuff into GitHub or wherever you have your repository, have that stuff built and deployed for you is a critical piece of the process. And then the other critical piece to me is the deployment is going to CDNs, right? It's not going to a web server. So everything is, that's kind of like the key thing that gives it security and speed and things like that, that to me is kind of a critical piece of the infrastructure of what makes something Jamstack is if you can deploy it to a CDN, that's kind of the important piece, right? So yes, I agree with everything you said, and yet I would add those pieces layered on top of it is like the, you know, the static site generator, the CI/CD process, and the deploying to edge servers /CDN,
which thank God is kind of like brainless nowadays. Like,
yeah,
I don't think about the CDN per se. Like my host just does that for me. Which, having been in this business for a very long time, that is an incredibly simpler approach compared to what I used to do, which, like you, was like FTP, the sync files up, and make sure you don't forget the one file to change and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. I remember I had some command line tool that actually would manage the deployment via FTP because it became such a pain because you were constantly overwriting the site. And yeah, so I think it is amazing how simple this stuff is. It's because all of that sounds complicated. It's like, oh, CI/CD to the edge servers and CDNs and blah. And it's, and even like, you know, serverless functions and all the stuff. And it's, and then all I'm doing is just checking files into my repository. Boom. Yeah, okay. The rest is all handled for me, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I know, like a totally separate of discussion would be, you know, is modern web dev too complex? And, you know, having been in here like you, like since day one, pretty much, I'd much rather be working now than how it was 20 years ago.
True. It's true. Although, I think on the complex issue, right, like Jamstack is sitting in the middle of that debate in a way because we have, you know, two ends of the spectrum on tools, right? We have things like, well, I know it's not your favorite, but Hugo or Jekyll or whatever, right? Or even 11D, right? Which are kind of a little more traditional static site generators. And you have tools like Next and Nuxt and Gatsby that are much more complex. Particularly Next has been driving Jamstack in this in a slightly different direction with the introduction of like incremental static regeneration, which now Netlify has added in to like their, with their proposal for DPR. It's distributed persistent rendering. Yes, took me a second. Distributed persistent rendering. And, you know, and then you also have the addition of like Next allows you to say, oh, by the way, just this one route is server-side rendered, right? So now it's not 100% statically rendered. There's this route or maybe a couple routes are server-side rendered. And so we've kind of gotten into this thing where one of the things that I loved about static sites, right, when we started doing it was it was simple, right? And then things got a little bit more complex, but it was still relatively simple. I was deploying some serverless functions. I'm doing, you know, and doing some other fancy stuff, right? But now things have gotten to kind of where you can do a Jamstack that is incredibly complex, right? With all kinds of complicated deployment features and server-side rendering and distributed persistent rendering, which for anybody who doesn't know what those distributed persistent rendering and incremental static regeneration is basically like when you have a really, really large site and I don't want to, the build can take a really long time, right? And so I don't want to have to build every single page because a huge chunk of my website probably rarely gets visited. So I could then deploy kind of a bunch of my site that's kind of the pages that are typically traffic, get a decent amount of traffic, and the rest are kind of rendered on demand. What's different from that and server-side rendering is that it's basically, it's still a static rendering, but it renders the first time for the first person, and then everybody else gets the static page, right? So yeah, it's gotten all that set, like that point is that is a little complicated. We are kind of getting back to being complicated again.
Well, I think, you know, I don't think it was ever totally simple. You know, I like the example of, and I saw this in a presentation, I can't remember the guy's name, but he said it's not necessarily about removing the complexity, but moving it closer. So, like, I know I've had simple sites where I've had to write Node.js scripts to do stuff, and you talked about the script you had for FTP. You know, there were complex things locally. Like, even my blog, I have some complex things going on my machine here locally. But in general, in deployment, it's pretty simple. So there's still a certain amount of complexity, but I like having it on my machine because I feel like I can actually handle that. If a CDN goes down, there's no way in heck that I wouldn't even know how to set that up. So it's a better complexity to manage. Like one of the reasons I left WordPress is because I did not want to manage its caching along with PHP and Nginx. I didn't want to manage that in production. I'd much rather have something that I can manage on my own machine locally.
Yeah, and I think goes back to something Matt Billman said. I don't remember exactly where he said this, but about, you can do like caching on WordPress, for instance, and get a similar result to what you'd get with Jamstack in some respects, right? From a speed perspective, maybe. But most people don't do that. And partly because it is complicated. Managing that cache isn't a simple task. I know because I tried to do it for a WordPress site that I was running. And it's like, okay, but some of the stuff is cached and other pieces aren't cached. And then managing how it handled the caching of, say, the blog content versus the comments and other things that were not necessarily cached was not really a simple task, right? So a lot of people just end up not doing it. I know, I don't miss having to deal with, you know, calls where you get somebody writing you or emailing you and calling you saying, I'm getting errors because the database connection is failing. I remember I used to deal with that one all the time, particularly when traffic spiked. And those things are kind of all gone now. I don't really, outages are rare. I mean, it happens, but it's very, very rare. If traffic spikes, I'm not worried the site is going to go down. One of the things I find that new people to Jamstack don't realize is like, they think like when the site's building, if it fails, oh my God, the whole thing is going to collapse. And it's like, no. I mean, that's the whole atomic builds, atomic deploys, right? It's like, it either all succeeds or it just doesn't deploy. So nothing is down while it's building. And if the build fails, it just stays with the old build. Or you can even, if something doesn't build properly and it does deploy, you can roll it back like without a problem. I mean, those kind of things are just, you know, it's hard to remember days when we had to deal with those kind of issues. Or like, you know, I remember one time years ago, I accidentally deployed via FTP something to the wrong subfolder. And oh my God, it was such a disaster trying to unwind that mess. But now we don't even deal with that. Like all that's automatic. So
I can remember like modifying a load balancer to point to like a new server. And that was the way I did A/B testing or updating to a new version. I set up a whole new server, whole new site. And then when I tested it in there and I was happy, I modified my load balancer. And yeah, I don't want to do that.
I do think though, you know, we are seeing quite a lot of change in the Jamstack world this year. We may even have to go and kind of tweak some of the chapters again, because things are just changing pretty fast this year. Because partly because it has started to gain some mainstream adoption and larger companies are trying to use it and dealing with more complex problems on their sites. You know, like even things like distributed persistent rendering. Most sites I build, like, you know, are not going to deal with having hundreds of thousands of pages. Maybe your blog, but other than that, like, you know, most people aren't dealing with that problem. But when you're like, say, a big e-commerce operation or a large enterprise company, and you do have hundreds of thousands of pages, and this does become an issue, or things like you know, you and I might be comfortable editing Markdown or even some of the our kind of some of the CMSs that. The UI is kind of, I mean, it works, but it's not great, right? It doesn't have that comfort of like the WordPress UI, which I grant WordPress does have a great editing environment. So then we have to start dealing with, okay, well, the marketing team is editing their pages, but then they're waiting on a build to happen to see, and then realizing they made a mistake, and then they have to, you know, go through that whole process all over again, wait for the deploy to fix that little mistake. And so we're starting to build tools that allow inline editing and previews and stuff like that. And so it's, things are changing quickly, I think, because big companies are adopting this.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Should I be excited or afraid of AI? The answer is yes, it's both.
Things are going to look so different in the next couple years. You will not be ready for the disruptions that are going to come.
I'm Jeff Nielsen, host of Digital Disruption, the go-to podcast for technology leaders.
Our generation's conflict, I think, is going to be emotional, not economic.
The companies that are going to win are the ones that have a couple of characteristics.
Stay ahead of the curve with Digital Disruption, available now on your favorite podcast platform.
Yeah, it's something that you touched on. You know, back in the old days, talking about this, there was a list of things where static websites was appropriate for, and like e-commerce wasn't one of that. And we're seeing that Jamstack is just inching that bar up and up. Like, I still could not say 100% of every web idea you had would be appropriate for Jamstack, but that number is a heck of a lot higher than it was when we started talking about this. Definitely e-commerce is absolutely supported for Jamstack. So things maybe get more complex, but it's because Jamstack itself is being able to be used in more and more places, which is great.
Right. So for people who don't know, you and I wrote a book years ago, and that was actually static sites, right? So it was just about static site generators. And in the opening chapter, I did talk about like, okay, what would be good? What would we didn't call it Jamstack, but what would static sites be good for, right? Like, and it was a list of like a handful of things. So like, these are the great solutions that this is perfect for. And so back then it was easier to say, to like count out the things that it was good for. Now it's like, I was trying to write the equivalent chapter for this book, and have a similar kind of like, what is this good for, not good for? And it's like, now I'm sitting there trying to think, I'm like, I could count on my hand maybe what I wouldn't recommend doing with this, as opposed to the things that I would. Most things, it's like, and even those things I wouldn't recommend now, right? I would say, yeah, you could do it. You totally could do it, and it would work. It's just maybe a little bit more complicated doing it that way than the alternative, but you could do it. So there's very few things I'd be like, okay, that won't work for Jamstack. So it is changing very quickly.
Yeah, I think it's less of, you know, could I do it? I think you could almost build anything. It's now like, okay, have I done too many workarounds to make this worthwhile at this point? But I don't think there's anything I couldn't at least try to build with Jamstack now, which is nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, people are even doing a lot of user-generated content, which at the time, like, that was, we couldn't really do that. So now, I mean, if you have you could either write out files and have the whole thing rebuild, or you can have call a serverless function and populate that way. a client side, or, you know, there's even more complicated solutions that rehydrate the page while and re-render that page when a new comment is submitted, for instance, as an example, if it was a comment system or something, right? Like, so you'd only rebuild that one page that had the comment and things like that. So like, we've gotten to the point where even some of that stuff, which I wouldn't have imagined 4 years ago, that we'd be like, okay, yeah, sure. If you have user generated content, yeah, go ahead. You know, it's fine. It could be Jamstack. But yeah, we can do that.
Yeah. So the good news on that is less, you know, can we do it? And more like, oh my God, we're allowing people to post on our website. What are they saying? Yeah. it's more concerned about that. Yeah. I know, like, when I talk about comments in particular, I'm like, yeah, you may not want comments. Like, ask yourself if it makes sense for your, you know, your content and your audience, if you actually want people writing stuff.
Yep. So changing topics a little bit. I know we talked a little bit about Jamstack tools. What are your favorite tools? I mean, what's your favorite static site generator? Where do you like to deploy your sites, et cetera?
Absolutely. I am in love with Eleventy. It has that good set of features and that good flexibility that I look out for. Other static site generators I've used in the past have had, you know, maybe great features, but were very inflexible. And I feel like Eleventy kind of hits that kind of perfect mid mark of, you know, yes, it gives you some tools, and what is not given, I know that I could write. Like, I know I can do anything. Jekyll, I really liked everything about it, but when it came to doing something custom, you had to write Ruby, and not being a Ruby person, that was, you know, a issue for me. It's not an issue with Jekyll, it's just an issue with me not knowing Ruby. Eleventy being based in Node.js means, you know, I can use JavaScript, and JavaScript's perfect, right? I can do anything with it. When it comes to deployment, Netlify is, you know, I call it the gold standard. Not that it's perfect, you know, they definitely have some things to work on, but they're leading the way in terms of the Jamstack. And so I tend to put all of my real sites on there. I do like Vercel a lot as well. And I find Vercel is a bit easier for temporary stuff, or like, I just want to run this real quick online and then, you know, have it do a proper build. So I'll use Vercel for everything that I'm playing with, and then Netlify for my more real stuff. Not that Vercel couldn't handle real stuff either. That's just the way that I've been doing it. How about you, Brian?
So, yeah, so I have I flip back and forth between two static site generators depending on what I'm trying to build. So I still love your favorite static site generator, Hugo.
I haven't said anything about you. I just want to say, I've said nothing about Hugo today. That's all you. Use a tool that's good for you.
It's fine. You know, we can, it's okay if we don't, you know, a lot of this is personal taste. So it's okay to not like a particular static site generator, because it's just like, okay, a lot of it's just a matter of like, I like the way that works. And it, because you said, as you said, it's a lot of you working locally doing stuff. So if it doesn't work for you, it matters nothing to the user. They don't know how the site was generated, right? So it matters to you and your workflow. So it's fine. I think I like to give you a hard time, but it's okay. I mean, there's other ones that I've tried that I don't like at all. And I wouldn't use, but I think for somebody else, it may work for their workflow perfectly. So I do like Hugo, and I do, if I'm doing a site that doesn't require like the full React or whatever framework based front end, I will use Hugo, and that actually amounts to a lot of sites. And the great thing about Hugo is it's blazing, blazing fast. I mean, the builds are so fast, they usually don't even realize like, that you're like, okay, something must have gone wrong. That didn't build, but it did. So, you know, so things like distributed persistent rendering and stuff often solve a problem that, like, well, if you could use something like Hugo, in which you can't always, it would actually, you could generate those thousands or even hundreds of thousands of pages pretty quickly. But when I do need the more frame, you know, complex UI interactions and of that a framework, what JavaScript framework would offer me, I tend towards Next.js. I will say I've struggled with React in the past. Next.js helped me kind of get to the point where I'm comfortable enough in React because I don't have to deal with the routing. It makes the routing really easy. I like the way it handles things like static props and static routes and stuff like that for pages. All that I find pretty straightforward to deal with. It has a lot of really cool features. It's relatively fast for building. None of the JavaScript 11e, I think, is probably the fastest one. None of the kind of framework-based ones tend to be very fast for site builds, but Next.js is pretty good. And it works for me when I need, you know, when I need that kind of complex front end. I often struggle though with, this is where you get into, particularly when you're using a framework-based solution, you're like, okay, is that happening on the front end or during the build? Like, is this variable being generated at which point? Which is something you don't generally have to think of when you're just building like a traditional server-side rendered thing. It's like, you know, where is this? Is this variable being created, and can I access it on the front end, and you know, things like that? Like, I guess you do in a server-side React app, you might have the similar kind of things, but you're not having like this variable only happens on my local machine because when it's being built, as opposed to, you know, accessible to on the client or anything like that. So I often struggle with that because then certain things seem to be like, okay, I can't figure out where this is happening and it's causing me errors, but I still like it.
So open-ended question, like where, I know we have to wrap up somewhat quick. So where do you see things changing in the next couple of years?
That is a good question. There seems to be a lot of debate within the community about some people wanting to broaden what is Jamstack, kind of the definition of Jamstack to kind of focus on things like just the edge deployments and the tooling. I worry about that because I think we've already kind of gotten too broad. But then things like DPR and like, you know, server-side render routes, and I think that's going to become more popular. Tools like Nuxt are already adding it. I know Zach is working on 11e Cloud. I don't know exactly what he's going to call it now, but it's like it basically would allow that kind of stuff for 11e. So I see those things kind of continuing to gain momentum and somewhat blurring the line between, well, what is Jamstack and what isn't Jamstack? So I do see us kind of struggling to define it when you know, you have some people arguing like, okay, what's the difference between a server-side rendered, app that caches the routes, right? Versus a Jamstack app that pre-builds the routes. I mean, it's just like, it's terminology difference really in many ways, but yeah, I do think those things are going to continue to evolve very quickly, particularly as larger companies are dealing with the kind of complex problems that, you know, widespread adoption has kind of brought us. What about you?
You touched on it being too broad or maybe becoming too broad. I know in the decade I did working in ColdFusion, if somebody was building a site, it was an app server, whether it was PHP, .NET, or ColdFusion. It was an app server. Like that was the assumption, was that you would have a web server plus an app server, and requests would come in, they'd work together to generate. But there wasn't really a question. Like that was just how you did it. And I think we make it to a point where Jamstack solutions, and there's so many of them and so varied, like that may become the norm. Like when somebody comes in, they say, we are building, you know, soandso.com. Don't go to soandso.com. I have no idea what it is, but you're building some website. And so just the assumption is that, yeah, it's going to be JAMstack. It's going to be statically rendered. We'll be enhancing it with JavaScript. We will just have to figure out what solution makes sense for that. I think JAMstack will be the default way to build things. Whereas AppServer will be, oh, you know what, we're the 1% where we're doing something very weird, and we really need that dynamic thing for every single result out there. That'll be the outlier.
Yeah, it will be interesting. You know, I know there's been some pushback to where people are like, oh, you know, maybe it's better if we just render everything on the server kind of thing. And it's like, but yeah, you and I have been around this industry long enough to, you know, we shift back and forth, you know, things we can't seem to, you know, there's not a straight path to moving things forward. But yeah, I think you're right. And that's even the debate I got, you know, like if you define this more broadly, it's just web development then. And I guess some people are like, yeah, that's fine with me. So yeah.
That's good. It keeps us employed.
So for anybody who's interested in our book, it is already available, what they call Manning Early Access Program, which is, they call it MEEP, which basically gives you the chapters as they're written. There are only two chapters that aren't out, and I take full blame for that. Yeah, that's totally my fault because that's all on me. Those two chapters are mine. But that means that they're going to be really, really good, unlike some of the... but yeah, so it's definitely available that way. The actual physical book, which, I mean, we're lucky enough to have a physical book because so many things aren't published that way anymore. The physical book will be out, I think, sometime in the fall, early fall, like September, but I'm not sure exact dates. So, you know, please go ahead and buy it and share anything, you know, you might, any feedback you may have with me or Ray, particularly if it's bad feedback, send it Ray's way. Yeah, I'll let him sift through all of it, right? So we'd love to hear what you think of the book and the approach of the book, just to kind of give folks a sense of our approach versus other books, is a lot of other books have been, okay, we're going to just teach you JAMstack by teaching you Gatsby or teaching you Next or whatever, right? We take one path, and Ray and I said, like, one of the things we love about JAMstack is there's like 100 different ways to do this. And so we try to kind of give you a taste of a number of different ones and building different types of solutions. So, like, you know, building a documentation site with Hugo and a blog with the Leveny and an e-commerce site with Next.js, et cetera. So, like, so you kind of get a taste of all of them and all the potential solutions so that you can find what works for you. Because as we said, this is very much like a what works for you kind of thing. All of these tools have a very different feel. So yeah, that's what the book's like. Anything additional to share about the book on your end, Ray?
No, I think you covered it well. Definitely buy one for you, buy one for your loved ones. Buy a second e-copy for you in case the first copy gets destroyed by a virus. Buy as many copies as you can so I can keep buying more Legos. I would really appreciate it.
Yeah, we're gonna need a lot of books sold for more of those Death Stars.
Just a few more copies.
Yeah. Legos are expensive. All right. Well, Ray, it was good meeting you.
Yeah. It was good talking to you as well.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the GoTo Podcast. Head over to gotopia.tech for lots more content from the brightest minds in software development.